This is the Lang Money Hour, where Smart Money talks on KQV with expert advice from CPA, attorney, and retirement and estate planning expert Jim Lang, best-selling author of Retire Secure and The Roth Revolution, Pay Taxes Once, Then Never Again. Now on air and worldwide, paytaxeslater.com. Now get ready to talk smart money.
And good evening and welcome to the Lang Money Hour. I'm Dan Weinberg, along with CPA and attorney Jim Lang. Our topic this week deals with a situation that most people don't like to think about, but the numbers don't lie. Millions of married women, either through divorce or by outliving their spouse, will end up on their own at some point, and too many of them just aren't prepared. They find themselves in a compromised financial position because they didn't ask the right questions during their marriage to protect their own financial interests. And tonight, Jim and his guest, Dr. Linda Babcock, will talk about the questions women must ask and how they can feel empowered to safeguard their financial future. Dr. Babcock is the James M. Walton Professor of Economics at CMU's Hines School of Public Policy and Management and a leading authority on economic gender equality. She's authored two successful books, including Women Don't Ask, Negotiation and the Gender Divide. Dr. Babcock is also the founder and faculty director of the Program for Research and Outreach in Gender Equity in Society, or PROGRESS. It's sure to be a fascinating and eye-opening conversation tonight, and we urge you to join us by calling in with your questions at 412-333-9385. That number again, 333-9385. And now, with that, let's say good evening to Jim Lang and Dr. Linda Babcock.
Welcome, Linda.
Hi, it's nice to be here.
The motivation for this show is Linda's books, by the way, Women Don't Ask, and in the more recent book, Ask For It, How Women Can Use the Power of Negotiation to Get What They Really Want, I think are groundbreaking books, and I think it's something that, frankly, every woman should have. Again, the first book is Women Don't Ask, and her more recent book, Ask For It, How Women Can Use the Power of Negotiation to Get What They Really Want. And the reason I wanted Linda on this show, which is more of a financial show, is because in my practice as a financial advisor, CPA, and an attorney, I often see women getting the short end of the stick if I don't proactively stick up for them. And there are going to be four areas that I'm going to mention, although I think Linda's probably going to say that some of the strategies that she talks about would go to all four of them, but or actually six of them. But there's some enormous problems that if women do not proactively address, that they could find themselves in a seriously compromised financial situation. The issue of when to take Social Security, and not just the issue of when a woman should take Social Security, but also when her husband should take Social Security, and particularly if, using the old paradigm, that he was the primary wage earner, or at least had a bigger record, earnings record, for the purposes of Social Security benefits. A lot of times, although it's a dying breed, many people still have options with regards to pensions, that is, getting a certain amount of money per month for the rest of your life, obviously a reduced amount if you're going to get a certain amount for your life and your spouse's life. Decisions regarding life insurance, investing decisions, fairness of equal income after the death of the husband. Some men think that after they die, it's not so important to provide an equal income, and some of the problems with traditional estate plans. So Linda is basically, I think, in her books, and please tell me if you think this is a fair characterization, trying to teach women how to stick up for themselves and what they can do to get a win-win situation. Now, of course, your book is more general, and it might be work, but it also might be in the marital home. Is that a fair generalization, that you're trying to help women get more and look for win-win situations?
Absolutely, and to think of using negotiation as a proactive tool to get what you want, because in our society today, so many things are negotiable, and especially things that didn't used to be negotiable. You know, we negotiate with, certainly in our families, we negotiate at work, but we also negotiate with our contractors, our insurance agents, we negotiate with Verizon, all kinds of things. And it really requires, being successful today really requires knowing how to negotiate, knowing how to ask for what you want. And it's just critical that women speak up for what they need and negotiate.
Well, you wrote that women don't ask for what they want, and they suffer severe consequences as a result. Could you elaborate on that?
Sure. We've been doing research for about 10 years at Carnegie Mellon with my colleagues, and what we found is that men are about four times as likely as women to negotiate for what they want. So women are more likely to just wait to be offered what it is that they want, or they accept the status quo. And you can imagine that this has a lot of consequences for the lives of women. In terms of economically, it might affect her earnings and her promotion abilities at work. At home, it affects her equality about household duties. And so it has a lot of consequences for women if they don't speak up, because men are just more likely to negotiate for all kinds of things. And again, as I said, women are more likely to just wait or accept the status quo without negotiating.
All right, so you mentioned that sometimes women don't negotiate as much at work. Is this very important for a woman's long-term financial future?
Absolutely, because you can imagine, of course, the impact on your salary if you don't negotiate. We did some examples in our book that not negotiating a first salary can cost you over $2 million over the life of your career. That's a lot of money, lots of money to use when you retire. And so it's, of course, about negotiating over your salary, but it's also about negotiating at work over things like promotions, about opportunity, about experiences to get where you want with your career. And if you don't do that, you're leaving a lot on the table, and you're leaving a lot of power with the people that you work for.
All right, so in your book, Ask For It, How Women Can Use the Power of Negotiation to Get What They Really Want, you don't just limit your discussion to negotiating salary at work. You actually use it for many other types of negotiations. What might be, let's say, a non-work negotiation that might be important for women to connect with?
Well, I might negotiate with my in-laws about where we're going to have Thanksgiving, for example. I might negotiate with my insurance company about a claim. In fact, I did that just this very afternoon about paying a claim that I wanted to have paid. It would be negotiating with a partner about division of household duties. And so just the number of times you could negotiate throughout the day is really just endless.
Well, I know that you're certainly not going to condone sex discrimination, but is it your starting point that women have to be more proactive themselves about initiating negotiations when maybe by nature they are not as willing or as prone to negotiate?
Yeah, how I think about encouraging women to negotiate is that we're just trying to level the playing field for women, because men are already negotiating a lot, and as a result, there's a lot being left on the table for women. And so I'm just encouraging them to speak up so that they can gain equality in our society.
And can you give us a few examples? Let's even do one or two work examples and maybe one or two non-work examples where, let's say, failing to ask or failing to negotiate can really have a negative impact on a woman's career, both salary and enjoyment of work, etc.
Yeah, so I'll tell you one work example that I hear a lot from women that I talk to, and that is that women often work very hard, are very good at their jobs, and what happens is that they just get a lot of work piled on top of them. So they just keep adding to the amount of responsibilities that they have without then getting a better title, a better salary, about actually getting a promotion. And so I think women are often waiting for their supervisor to say, oh, you're doing so much, let's promote you. And that usually doesn't happen. And so what I like to advise women is that if they are taking on responsibility, to think about the job title that is commensurate with what they're doing, and to negotiate for that change in title, change in responsibility, change in salary. So that would be an important work example that of things that women would be leaving on the table by not negotiating.
And I'm a boss myself, and I try to be as fair as I can. On the other hand, frankly, if I notice that one person is competently doing a lot of things that I ask them to do, and then if I ask them to do something that might be a little bit outside of their job description and they do it well, it's very tempting to just give them the next project. And then if I'm not thinking, and then at review time say, okay, you know, you deserve a 4 or 5% raise, but perhaps they have elevated their position in a way that they deserve more. Is that fair?
I think that's fair. And it's not that you are trying to discriminate against your employees. I'm sure, Jim, that that's the last thing that you're doing. I know you will. That's not the kind of thing that you would do. But it's that supervisors don't always have everybody all the time on their radar screen thinking about what they need and what they want. And so you may be overlooking some employees because they're not speaking up. And that's what I'm really trying to get people that manage others to think about, is that is to try to allocate resources, allocate opportunities more equitably, not just based upon who negotiates, because women may not be speaking up.
Okay, so are there examples where, let's say, people who are enlightened or do believe in equality and have some, let's say, a feminist side to them, where they might find themselves in a position that they're not giving women really a fair or equal opportunity just because women aren't asking?
Absolutely. So let me tell you a story, and it's about my husband. Hopefully he's not listening here on the radio. So we both work at Carnegie Mellon. I'm a professor there, and at the time he was an assistant dean of the public policy school, the Heinz College. And one day I had a bunch of the female PhD students in my office, and at that time I was the PhD program director. And these students come into my office, and they're obviously very upset, and they tell me about why they're so upset. So here's what they said. They said that the male PhD students had been assigned to actually teach courses, and the female students had been assigned to be teaching assistants. And of course, being an instructor for a course is much better than being a TA, because you're paid more, you have more interesting responsibilities, you get to teach rather than grade assignments, and teaching looks great on your resume. And so they had the opportunity, the male students had the opportunity to teach classes, the women were being the teaching assistants, grading papers and holding office hours. So they came to me and they said, this isn't fair. And I agreed with them that this certainly wasn't fair. And so I marched down to the associate dean's office, because that was the man who handled teaching assignments. Of course, that's my husband. He's in big trouble. So I go down to his office and I said, you know, Mark, what's happening here? Why are the men teaching and the women are TAs? And he said, well, that's really weird. How did that happen? And what we did is we pulled out the list of students and we looked at the assignments. And sure enough, the men were teaching and the women were TAs. And I said, you know, how did this happen? And he thought for a minute and he said, the women didn't ask. And I said, well, what do you mean? And he said that each of the male PhD students had come to him over the summer and said, hey, I want to teach a class. Can I teach a class? And our students are really great teachers. We would love to have them in the classroom. So he found opportunities for them to teach. And what he realized is that none of the women had asked to teach a course. So I go backstairs to my office to talk to the women, and I told him what my husband had said. And they said, wow, that's really weird. You know, we were waiting for an email that would ask us if we wanted to teach, that we were waiting for the opportunity. And it's actually why I started the research program that I embarked on for the next decade. Is I just noticed this phenomenon happening in my college. Men were getting opportunities that were going to help them advance in their career and would get them paid more, and women were waiting for the opportunity. Now, I think what's important about this story is that my husband didn't set out to discriminate against women, but that was, in fact, what he did by the fact that he wasn't paying attention to who asked and who didn't, and therefore allocating these opportunities more fairly. So I think it was kind of an eye-opener for everybody, just that this discrimination can happen without us meaning to it, and certainly we want to take steps to correct that.
Well, interesting that you mentioned your husband, because I do want to veer the conversation a little bit to negotiating with your husband, because when we talk about these financial issues, things like when should you take Social Security, it doesn't sound like it's really a negotiation-type issue. But, for example, Jane Bryan Quinn actually thinks it's a women's issue, because let's take the paradigm of the old-fashioned, let's say, economic paradigm where the husband was the primary earner and he now reaches age 62 and he wants to take his Social Security early so he can have some additional money to spend. But that actually has some very serious long-term financial impact and a very negative impact on his wife. First, they'll get much less Social Security while they are together, and perhaps as, or even more importantly, if he predeceases her, and if they're the same age, he is likely to predecease her by maybe 5 to 9 years, then she will have a very reduced lifestyle because, A, she won't be getting 2 Social Securities, and, B, if he takes it early, she's going to have a reduced Social Security, and particularly if that's a major part of their income. So how would we, let's say, address the issue when, let's even say that the man is not trying to be sexist, he's just saying, hey, I'd like to take my Social Security early. What are some of the lessons that we can take from women not asking in these work settings and maybe use them towards negotiating with your husband a little bit on Social Security and other financial issues that we'll get to?
Well, it's a great example, Jim, because anytime there's this decision that affects more than one person, it becomes a negotiation. And so a woman, first of all, needs to recognize it as an opportunity to negotiate and understand that she has an equal claim to how that decision gets made. And so really recognizing this is something we need to talk about, we need to think about, we need to brainstorm options about what we could do, and then we really need to play out how this would affect both of us and then make decisions that are in our interests going forward.
What would you say to a woman who has been in the habit, and I really fight this, but what would you say to a woman who has been in the habit of letting her husband make financial decisions and kind of going along with more or less whatever he wanted to do?
Well, I think it could have consequences for her, especially the example that you said in terms of the man taking Social Security early means that the couple would get a reduced amount and that that's likely to have a bigger impact on her because of her longer lifespan relative to his. And so a woman really needs to take control over these decisions and these negotiations that affect her economic financial future.
And would you also, a lot of times, I actually, when I'm working with a husband and a wife, I actually require both of them to come in. And the only exception I'll make is if somebody isn't ambulatory or maybe there's an extreme situation, because I really don't want, I do want it to be a full education for both parties. But if the woman is just not used to questioning her husband, do you think that she should just say, hey, this is really important, it's my financial future, and I'm not just going to sit back and listen to whatever he says?
Well, let me say a couple of things about that. Jim, what you said first is really important, and that is that it's critical to have both people in the room at the same time discussing financial issues, because you don't want to be in a position where it's filtered through someone else. So being there in the room, having the discussion is the first point. I guess the second point is really to be knowledgeable about whatever it is you are making decisions and negotiating about. And so if a woman doesn't have a lot of experience or a lot of expertise in the area of financial decision making, she needs to learn a little bit about that so that she can make good decisions for herself. So getting that information and expertise is really critical. And then, of course, it's a matter of speaking up for your interests and knowing what it is you want. And it may not be that you know how to solve the problem, but certainly you know how to express your interests and concerns. And then the husband and the wife and you, Jim, as the financial advisor, can have a dialogue and a conversation. Okay, now that we know what is important to people, what are some options? What are different ways we could do these things? How could it work out? And then the couple can really look at the portfolio of options on the table and decide what is best for them, given what's important to them.
We are here with Dr. Linda Babcock, who is the author of Ask For It, How Women Can Use the Power of